Accession number 14981, William Cornell, Reel 2.
Mr. Cornell, Reel 2. You said that you were 17 years of age, Mr. Cornell, when you joined the Territorials. Do you recall the date that you joined?
I think it would be about February in 1939. If it wasn't that, it was in February in 1938. I'm not quite sure of that date. I think it was 39, because I never got away with the leave camp with them.
What's the process for joining the Territorials? What did you have to do?
There was nothing at all. You went down, a friend took you down. He proposed you to the company sergeant major there. He asked a few questions. And then that was the initial part of it. And you had a medical to see what sort of condition you were in, if you were A1 or otherwise. And if you were A1, you carried from there. And the date after that, you were sworn in. That was allegiance to the crown and all the rest of it. You were sworn in.
Was that done with the Bible? Or?
I think it was. Recollecting back, it's a long time ago, but I think it was actually. I think there was a group with you, all the new people what had just recently joined, were put together and they had this little ceremony where it was called the swearing in ceremony, and. I'm not quite sure now, but I think there was a coin involved. It might have been the King's Fillin, I don't know, but I've got a feeling it was that. And however, as long as you were A1 and you were sworn in, that meant you were accepted for the Territorial Army. Of course, with being under oath, you were completely in their hands of what to do and where to go. You had no control of your own life after that.
Was the medical a thorough medical or a casual type?
In my case, it was casual, for the simple reason that the medical, it was only a standing up one in front of an army. I might have been a civilian doctor on loan to the army just for that specific duty. But in my case, he examined me and he missed a flaw in my health, which I can come to later on in the recording.
So you'd pass your medical and you'd be sworn in. What was the next thing that happened to you?
Well, you just had to attend the drills. You had drills twice a week on an evening where you made your own way down to the drill hall at Spennymoor, and it varied from all sorts of things, from mostly drill. You were taught to drill, left turn, right turn, slope arms and all this business, was rifle drill, marching drill, and occasionally some firing practice on the miniature range.
What weapons were you using?
Oh, it was the Enfield rifle, the firing 303 bullets. It was a shortly Enfield rifle, equipped with the bayonet, of course, which was detachable. And that was the main. But then, apart from that, you also, because in your sections you had your machine guns. In our case, it was the Lewis guns were being phased out, and the Bren gun had just been brought in. So really all of the training was given on for the Bren gun. And the only other weapon which concerned you as a platoon was the 2-inch mortar, which one man in each platoon carried the 2-inch mortar. And as I say, the Bren gun weighed about 28 pounds and the mortar would be maybe slightly more. And later on in life, during the active service, I had the job of manning the 2-inch mortar. That accounts probably for being deaf in one ear, because as you fired it, you turned your head away and you got the full blast all the time.
Which company had you joined?
C Company. It was C Company of the 6th Battalion DLI. It was C Company, and that was their headquarters at Spennymoor, whereas the headquarters of the company itself was at Bishop Auckland at that time.
Can you describe the drill hall to me?
Well, just the one word explains it, a hall. It was a big sort of airy sort of hall with a few little rooms to one side of it, which uses for the office side. And if I remember rightly, at the end of the below, you went down a few steps and you came to the miniature firing range, which I think was underground, but I'm not too sure whether it's underground or on the side.
What distance was the firing range?
That was the full length of the drill hole. I think in measurement you'd be talking about, maybe it's 100 yards at the maximum.
Was the company complete? No, it was in its full strength, the company.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was,
where did it draw its people from?
Well, actually, everybody in the Totara was a volunteer. Nobody influenced you in any way. When you joined, it was completely your own decision. And in my case, it was one of my workmate friends who was serving his time to be a bricklayer at the same time as me. He joined and he enjoyed the life, and he eventually coaxed me to join in with him, and that's how I came to be in the TAM.
Did the people who were in the company come from the surrounding towns?
Oh, yes, because obviously with it, there was nobody had motor cars very much in those days, and it was out of the bus service, and you had to be within range of getting to these drills twice a week, so obviously it had to be a sort of local assembly.
We were expected to put in a certain number of drills.
Yes, you had to have a certain number of drills. And if you achieved them certain number of drills, I think it was 50 if I remember right, you had to have 50 drills in 1 year. And if you'd completed them drills, you were eligible to go on the annual camp, fortnight camp for them. Which was, in my case, unfortunately I never got to one because the war broke out. And that was the end of the camping business. So one of the main reasons for joining was to get away on this fortnight's camp, because in them days you never had, there was no such thing as going away for a holiday. You had no day at the seaside, and that was that. So it was something to be anticipated and look forward to, which in my case had never turned out. I never got my drill yet. Instead I got a long holiday of about 6¾ year during the war.
You've mentioned the drills that you did, and marching drills. Did they start you off at the light infantry pace from the very beginning?
Oh, yes. Everything was done from that. There was no working up to anything. Everything had to be done according to the book. And that was their rules and regulations. They were what applied later on in life and in the active service had to apply at that particular time as well. So that means the drills. But all this about, you probably heard it said that the DLI march past, it wasn't a march, it was a gallop. Well, it was a march, but it was approximately 160 steps a minute, which was fast. It was more like a run than a march. But that was only, you only did that for a short period of time on a march past. That was ceremonial more than anything else. Your normal activities were more leisurely pace, just a normal pace.
How did you learn your drills? Was it to numbers or something of that?
Yeah, so it was all done by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and that was from left turn. We started off stand to attention, stand at ease, stand easy, and then went on to left turn, right turn, about turn, and all the various turns, and then followed on with the rifle drill, which included your different positions of carrying the Shortley Enfield, which is at the trail or at the slope, and various other things.
And in the beginning, did you have to call out the numbers?
Yes. Oh, yes, you did as a group. All the new recruits, suppose there was 10 of you, were in charge of a sergeant or a corporal, and everything was done by numbers to get the timing right, obviously, like, and you had to shout the numbers out as you did the drill.
And presumably at one, you came to the point where you could do it in your head.
That's right, exactly, yes, uh-huh. But of course it was only practice that made perfection. Not as doing it on your own, but as doing it as a group of people, so that if you sloped arms, everybody sloped arms exactly at the same time. And that was that only came through practice, obviously.
Did you do any route marching?
Yeah, sure, I did route marching, in them days, they weren't terribly long, not till the war broke out. I mean, you did 6 miles, sometimes 10 miles. You did PT, physical training, that sort of stuff. There's no doubt they kept you fit, there's no doubt about that. And route marching, as far as I remember, the longest march you did were only about 6 miles. Later on in life, after the war started, a 25-mile route march was quite a common occurrence. Blisters or no blisters.
This would take you out, in effect, into the community.
That's right, exactly.
How were they receiving? Did they take any notice of you?
I don't think really. I would think more with a little bit of ridicule than anything else. Because things changed when the war broke out. All of a sudden we became heroes then. Mm.
How did they show their ridicule?
Well, just by laughing, obviously, I would think. That wasn't too bad.
Did they have the opinion that you were kind of a toy soldier or a weekend?
Exactly. I would have thought so. But who knows what was in their mind, bro. I would guess that you're right on that one. Mm-hmm.
What was the discipline like? You were still basically a civilian.
You weren't actually. As soon as you were sworn in, you were a soldier, like it or not. So, as I said before, you came under their rules and regulations. And discipline was strict. It was very strict. Always, right from day one, it was strict. In other words, you were taught that what you were told to do, you had to do it. There was no compromise and there was no excuses. And you had to do it, and you were punished by various ways if you didn't do it properly. And I can't remember what the pay now was, in which you got so much a year, but I can't remember for the life of me what it was, but it wasn't very much. But you would probably have some of that stopped off you for being a naughty boy, more or less. And if you did anything serious, of course, it would have meant the army prison, which always nicknamed the glass houses, which was the army punishment centres. But actually, I don't think it happened much in the TA, but it did happen later on in the battalions.
I presume, is it, they could finish with you in the TA if you didn't fit
yes.
in.
Oh, yes.
How did you take to the discipline?
No trouble at all, no bother whatsoever, because I should think the only people that didn't go with it were the people what were never any good later on in life. If you couldn't accept discipline, well, they were never any good in my mind, because they run amok, do their own thing, and probably a little bit more discipline in our world today wouldn't be a bad thing. In fact, I would say in my own mind that some of the causes of all this trouble what you having and hooliganism and murders and all this are due to lack of discipline, not just through the army discipline, but right from going to school in the olden days, where you were punished if you did wrong. You were taught discipline. Then you had your home, your fathers and your parents taught you discipline. Later on in life, if you joined the army or were called up, you had the army discipline. So whether you liked it or you didn't like it, must have been a very, very good influence on your life in later years. Because you did distinguish between right and wrong, which nowadays we don't seem to do that.
How were you received into the unit amongst men? Because some of them obviously were much older than you.
Yes, that is true, that is true. But actually, there was no problems whatsoever, and everyone did try to help. I can't remember any bad blood of any description between any of the recruits and the ones who had been in some time. In fact, they were only two-faced to show you various things and dodges, which helped you through your army life.
We haven't talked about your uniform that you were allocated. What did they give you?
Yes, the uniform initially was what you call the service dress. Not the battle dress, as went through the war with, but the service dress was more of a jacket with pockets and trousers seemed to match, all in khaki, of course. And instead of the forage cap, you had a pig cap, the army pig cap. And on top of that, you had one uniform, and then you had this massive greatcoat. It weighed about a quarter of a ton, I think, if I remember rightly. And that was about that. But later on, when it got near the war breaking out, that was changed to battle dress, which was the blouse and trousers.
You would be given boots, of course.
Oh, yes, you had no, you didn't have to buy them, no. Well, it weren't given, actually, it was loaned to you. If you left for any reason, you would have to return. If you didn't return, you haven't to pay for, obviously.
And you were responsible for looking after them?
Oh, yes, by all means. That was all the spare boats and all. You got your boats as well.
Mm-hmm. Who was the commanding officer?
I can't remember. Strange to say, I can't remember. I remember the company sergeant major. It's in the back of my mind, but I just cannot pinpoint his name at this moment.
You've mentioned...
He was an old soldier, obviously.
You've mentioned company sergeant major. Who was that?
Ah, the sergeant majors. There was two involved, and one was a man called Mac Mahone, and the other one was called company sergeant major Minnis. Of the two, company sergeant Minnis was a much friendlier type of man than Mac Mahone. But in their own way, they were both excellent men.
Were they regulars or ex-regulars?
No, I don't. I think they'd gone through life in the TA Army. Mm-hmm.
Were there any men amongst you who had served in the First World War?
There must have been, looking back over, but I can't pinpoint them, but there must have been, because there were, it wasn't all that long after the First World War, when all said and done, so there must have been soldiers in there what were in the TA in the First World War.
Sergeants and corporals, do you recall any of those?
I can remember one called... It's Gone As Well. Sorry about that, It's Gone As Well. Mm.
And the bunch you were with, the chaps that we were with, were friendly, as you say.
Oh, yes, no problems whatsoever.
Do you recall any of them by name, personality?
Well, my particular friend then was them. There was a chap called Kenny Chapman. He's dead now, of course. He went through the wall, right, but he's dead now. And another lad was from Tudor in Spennymoor called Tommy Pennick. They were my immediate pals because they were in the same section and everything else. And we did everything together. Actually, two out of the three of us came back from the war, but one of them, Kenny Chapman, died early on after the war.
We have talked about the training, but did they give you any gas training at this point?
Yes, oh yes, you had a gas mask, and I used to hate it. The gas mask training was absolutely terrible. You had these gas masks, and that was fair, and it was bad enough trying to breathe through them. But what they made you do was actually run in them, carrying all your equipment and everything else. And you finished up gasping for breath through the gas mask. I didn't like them at all.
Did you have to go into any hut where this gas was?
No, not at that stage, no. Later on, after the war started, we went through, you were tested in gas areas and shown how to test for gas by lifting the side of the gas mask and taking a very small breath. And you also had little drops of mustard gas placed on your skin to see your reaction to it and things like that. There was no ill effects, it was practically not, because the quantities were very minute, obviously.
But at this time they wouldn't know that if in a war, in the event of a war, the gas would not be used.
Not at all, no. Strangely enough, it was part of your equipment right through the wall, was the respirator. And it didn't change, actually. It was the same type of respirator, which was quite a bulky thing. And you carried it wherever you went, even out abroad in Burma, your gas mask was carried.
You're still working, of course.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
You said you were 17 when you joined the Tories. Mm-hmm. Was that the youngest age limit that they would take?
Is it what?
The youngest age limit that they could take?
No, there was another age, but you were classed as a boy soldier. And I think that was round between 15 and 16, if I remember rightly. But you were classed, not as a soldier, but just as what was termed as a boy soldier.
Do you recall where you were when war was announced?
Yes, we were in a church service, actually. We'd been called up 3 days previously, and we were at a church service at near Neville's Cross. I think you called the church St. Oswald's, if I remember rightly, near where there's a golf course now. The church is still there, actually, but we were in this service when it was announced about the war starting.
This was a military service. The battalion was there, company was there?
No, a church service at MBS was the public. It was just normal church service, but your group of your soldiers, if you were of that faith, obviously, if you were a Church of England faith, you went on what you call church parade. And on church parade, you were marched to church in a group. You sat in a group in part of the church. But you just joined in the service as the normal congregation would.
You said you were called up 2 or 3 days before the outbreak of war. How was that done?
Well, in my case, I was at work, and I was working near Durham City on what is now the, that was part of the university buildings. We're building a new complex for there. And in my case, all what happened was an army truck came, and two sergeants got out and went to the former's cabin first, and eventually they all trundled up to me on the scaffold where I was working laying bricks, and they said, you've got to come now with us. I said, I can't do that, I've got to go home. In fact, I've got a motorcycle here to get me home, which I can't leave. Yeah, I've got to get that home, then I'll come. No, no, you must come now. And so I had to leave the motorbike, leave my tools and leave everything, went in the van, and we took down to the drill hall at Spennymower. And the reasons best known to the cells, we were locked in, weren't allowed out, probably to stop us escaping. But that was the first day of that. And of course, when we were taken, we were handed this calling up paper to say that we'd been called up into the forces, and we were due to all the restrictions and everything else that were placed on the soldiers at that time.
You were a rifleman in one of the platoons, were you?
Yes,
Do you recall which platoon it was?
Well, in a battalion, you probably know there's the battalion, and you have your three infantry companies, A, B and C, then you have headquarters company and things like that on top, but the ordinary infantry single company was composed of three platoons, each platoon was approximately 30 men, and then you had a headquarters platoon on top of that, which is roughly the same. So, and there was the three times that number in the company, which was made, that made up the full company, infantry company.
Which platoon were you in?
Well, in different battalions, I was in different ones, but right through the war.
This starting one, the.
I can't remember now. No,
so they brought you in effect from work to the drill hall. Mm. When did you get the opportunity to get home and tell your family what was happening?
It was after war had broken out. We were allowed, I think it was after, for 3 days I think, or up till maybe 4 days after the war had been declared, we were kept at the drill hall, and of course we were just sleeping on the floor, on a wooden floor, and eating what we thought in them days was absolutely atrocious food. It was stew out of this great big urn thing, and that was about all, and no life at all. It was pretty grim for them 4 days, but after that, when things calmed down a little bit, they did allow us to go home, and that was to collect our proper things, what we'd need them, and leave our civilian things at home, make arrangements. And then you had to report back again, of course, and then from then on it was completely the army after that. There was no home life at all.
How had you got your motorbike back home?
In that case, believe it or not, the firm I worked for, they got it home for me and busted it back home.
So in the 3 or 4 days, or whatever number of days it was that you were in the drill hall, in those very, very first days, what were you doing?
Oh, just your normal training, but, what's the word to describe it, more severe. I mean, you know, more go about it, and more determined and everything else. Like. But basically, it was just a rounding up process to get everybody, what were in the TA, together. So there was no chance of them disappearing all of a sudden.
How did you feel? You joined the Terriers for a bit of excitement and,
yes,
and the prospect of a holiday.
My only feelings were at that time, there was no bad feelings, it was completely excitement, looking forward to anything that would come.
That was your feelings when
that was my conflict.
When you knew you were going into war?
Yes, 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 yes. There was no feeling of danger. I never felt in any way disturbed about the thought of going to war in them days. Because at that age you probably didn't know where it was.
About your parents then, how did they take it that you were now a regular soldier?
Not very well, my father, because he wasn't keen on the idea of me joining the at all. But when war did break out, he did say, "Well, William," he says, "you made your mind up," and he says, "I hope everything goes well for you," and he accepted it, and there was no ill feeling at all, whatever, about that.
Your mother, how did she
My mother, just the same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there were a few little tears, and that was that, but everything was all right.
Mm-hmm. Presumably on these early days as well, you were being re-equipped, you were getting some of the things that you mm-hmm. hadn't had before.
Mm-hmm.
You said, did you change the battle dress at this time, in those early days?
Yes, but in the early days you were given your battle dress. But you were allowed to retain your service dress, which was, to my way of thinking, the best. You look more of a soldier in a service dress than you ever did in a battle dress, but that's neither here nor there. But you were allowed to keep the service dress in them days for off-duty use or special occasion use.
You said you were sleeping on the floor. Was that on the bare boards?
Not exactly. You had a palliasse, and that was a bag filled with straw, and you had to fill your own straw into this bag, and that was what you slept on.
And where did you keep your uniform and equipment?
Well, everything was, as a soldier, everything had to be carried with you. You had your kit bag, big kit bag, and I remember them days it had a brass sort of loop, a brass handle loop, which you could put a little lock into, as a matter of fact, which you had a little lock, and you kept the key to keep your stuff in there. But it was all kept in. You had your big pack, which you carried on your back. You had your side pack on the side. You had your respirator on your front. And you had your kit bag, and everything had to go into them things. Your small kit, which is called the small kit, was your shaving tools, things like that. They were kept in your haversack. And the same as your daily rations, if you went on a march or anything, they were kept in the haversack as well. But you didn't carry the kit bag stayed behind you. Well, you didn't have to carry that unless you moved from one place to another, then you had to carry it. But for the normal life, you had your rifle, your small pack, your big pack, and a gas cape, which is another item which I never mentioned. You had a yellow gas cape, as well as your respirator. And that you had to keep them with you all the time, of course, your rifle, your ammunition pouches and things like that.
So the first few days weren't particularly comfortable.
But as I say, behind it all was this great excitement, this expectancy of you're going into danger. It was, you're looking forward to it. It was the excitement of it all, really, at that age. Looking back, it seems silly, but there's no doubt in my mind it was correct at that time. That's how I felt about it.
The food you were getting in the drill hall was basically stew, I think you said.
Yes. Oh.
Where was it coming from? Was it being
cooked
on the premises?
Well, outside the drill hall, they had what you call these field kitchens. And there were these great big boiler things. And they had these petrol blowers, which used to heat them up. It was all during these things, because your equipment, the army issued with a mess tin, which was an aluminium tin, and an enamel pint butt. That was everything had to go in them two things. Oh, knife and fork, of course.
Breakfast, was it any different from what you've been used to?
We didn't get much breakfast, I don't think. I think it was only more or less biscuits for breakfast. I know that days, early on, you only got, later on they were organised better, but in them early days, you had to settle for one meal a day, really. You had a cup of cocoa late at night and things like that, but one, as regards the meals, you only had one really meal a day, apart from you had bread and butter and maybe share a tin of fish or something like that. Pilchards, they were, actually.
So you must have been quite hungry.
Yes, as young boys, you were big eaters, and well, in fact, you were always hungry. Mm-hmm.
Did the attitudes of the civilians change dramatically when war was broken out and you were no longer...
I would say yes. Everybody became friendly and wanted to talk to you and wished you well and all the rest. So there was quite a distinct change in the attitude.
After the 3 or 4 days, you said, after the war broke out, that you were in the drill hall, what happened to you next?
Oh, well, in our case, what happened next, if I remember rightly, we were put on trucks and we were taken to West Hall Road Schools, which was our village for the next month, a few months.
And where was this?
This was in South Shales, West Hall Road Schools in South Shales. And again, just like carried on from there, but it was much better than the drill hall, and conditions gradually improved. The food got better as the army corps got a bit more experience, and the rations got a little bit better. We were a long way off our home fare, of course, but still, it did improve under what it was the first years. And then apart from that, it was quite an enjoyable time, that period there, because at that particular time, how we came to South Shales was... whereas I joined in the 6th Battalion, they were preparing to go to France at that stage. Well, I was under the age of 18, so I was classed as what was termed then as an immature. And all the immatures were posted from various other companies to this South Shales base, and the new battalion was formed called the 10th Battalion of the Daylight.